The AEMO report, the Energy Market Operators report, makes it quite clear that there are a number of other options to ensure that beyond 2022, New South Wales has enough dispatchable, reliable electricity. They just need an investment framework in place. So I really find it hard to conclude other than Malcolm Turnbull is playing some politics on this. This is a very big distraction from the broader question that was recommended by the Energy Market Operator last week, reflecting the recommendation from Australia's chief scientist a few months later. We need to put a clean energy target in place and get investment.
Hello, I'm Michelle Bratton, and this is the Conversations Politics podcast. The government is currently making energy policy its focus and is putting a major emphasis on coal, especially in light of a report last week from the Australian Energy Market Operator, which warned of potential electricity shortages in the next few years. The government is painting Labor's commitment to renewables as irresponsible and set to guarantee power prices will remain high and go even higher. Labor, for its part, says the government is driving the investment uncertainty which underpins the current high prices we're seeing, and is on the wrong side of energy and climate change history with its commitment to coal. Today we're joined by opposition climate change and energy spokesman Mark Butler, who titled his recent book Climate Wars. Mark Butler, you write in Climate Wars that over the past decade, the defining fault line in Australian politics has been climate change. And you also say that Australia won't be able to make serious progress in this issue without an end to the toxic divisions. Where do you see the climate and energy debates ranking at the next election, and will the high toxicity still be there?
Well, I think the energy policy question is ranking very, very highly among voters' concerns, and certainly among the concerns that business have about their viabilities and their level of investor certainty to make investments to grow their business or even just to keep their business going. So the broader question of climate change won't necessarily feature right near the top of the list of voters' concerns. It hasn't for really forever, but I think energy is right up there with health and education and cost of living, given particularly that it is such a big part of the cost of living issue at the moment.
Now, the big discussion at the moment is about extending the life of AGL's Liddell plant. Where does Labor stand on this?
Well, we don't make a habit of responding to thought bubbles, particularly on energy policy. These are major investor decisions. And Malcolm Turnbull, who's floated this in the second half of last week, has put no detail out there about what would be involved in extending this station beyond its operating life. The only group that has actually crunched the numbers and thought about what would be involved is AGL, and they've obviously taken the view it doesn't stack up. So if there is a case to be put that says some investment is a worthwhile investment to keep Liddell extended, then obviously we'd look at it. But the problem with the way in which Malcolm Turnbull's framed the debate is he's tried to frame it as if that is the only option we have for ensuring reliable, affordable supply of electricity in New South Wales beyond 2022, whereas the Energy Market Operators report makes it quite clear, supported by industry over the last few days, that with a proper investment framework in place, new investment that will last decades, not just a few more years, which is what the extension of Liddell would mean, but decades could take place. At the moment, though, we have an investment strike. And if we can't end the investment strike, then yes, in 5 years' time in New South Wales, we will potentially be in a position of supply shortage.
But you say this is a thought bubble, and maybe it started off that way, but it's now become a fairly serious discussion about the future of this plant. Would Labor, in principle, think this was a reasonable course?
Well, as I said, we're not going to respond to one option that's uncosted, that's not been worked up by anyone except AGL that concluded it didn't stack up. And we're certainly not going to respond to an option by either supporting it or opposing it without knowing what the alternatives are. And the AEMO report, the Energy Market Operators report, makes it quite clear that there are a number of other options to ensure that beyond 2022, New South Wales has enough dispatchable, reliable electricity. They just need an investment framework in place. So I really find it hard to conclude other then Malcolm Turnbull is playing some politics on this. This is a very big distraction from the broader question that was recommended by the Energy Market Operator last week, reflecting the recommendation from Australia's chief scientist a few months later. We need to put a clean energy target in place and get investment flowing. The Energy Council put it, I think, very succinctly last week. They said the problem is not old coal-fired power plants closing. The problem is that there's nothing being built to replace them. That's the challenge.
Now, the Market Operator report did paint a picture of quite potentially serious energy shortages over several years. Say there's an election next year, at the latest the year after. Say we have a shortened government. What would be the immediate actions of that government to stop blackouts in the summer?
Well, there's two scenarios. What I hope is that during this term of Parliament, when we're in the opposition, that we are going to be able to come to a bipartisan agreement on an investment framework in the form of a clean energy target, which has never been our preferred policy, but we've said we would get behind, given it's the only option apparently on the table after the release of the Finkel report. So I'd like to think that we get to the next election with bipartisan agreement around an energy policy investment framework, and you will see investment start to flow so that if Liddell closes in 2022 or 3 or 4, whenever it closes, and it is going to close in the next several years, that there is new plant with battery storage, with pumped hydro, with gas peaking plant there to firm it up, but that's there to ensure reliable supply in New South Wales. Now, if we don't get to that position by the end of this Parliament and we are elected, well, then we're going to have to, I guess, pursue the same objective from government rather than opposition, because everyone in the business community, the renewable energy companies, the traditional thermal generators like AGL and Energy Australia, the Business Council, everyone has said we need bipartisanship here. If we don't get bipartisanship, the investment strike that has caused this energy crisis is going to continue, and the crisis will just get worse. Prices will keep skyrocketing, and you will have very serious blackout concerns over summers.
Now, we often hear calls for bipartisanship from Labor on this and that, and I think that many voters would be a bit cynical, saying, well, this is just a bit of a pose, that they're trying to score a point. How genuine are you in this desire for bipartisanship? What's in it for you?
Well, the first thing in it for us is the national interest. I mean, we are in the middle of a deep energy crisis at the moment, and this is not an energy crisis like equivalents that we've experienced over recent decades that are caused by external shocks like the oil crisis. This is self-inflicted. This is inflicted by the Parliament's inability to come up with a stable, enduring policy framework that allows us to renew our electricity infrastructure. Now, that's partly got to do with climate change, but even if there wasn't a climate imperative, our electricity infrastructure, so much of which was built in the 60s and 70s, needs to be replaced. And at the moment, it's not being replaced. So there is a national interest here. We recognise that, you know, sometimes you just have to put politics aside and come to a middle ground position. I hope the government is working to that position as well. I recognise that Mr Turnbull and Mr Frydenberg have very difficult dynamics in their coalition party room on that, but I really do think this is in all of our interests to get beyond, because the crisis will just get worse. You know, it will dominate the Parliament, it will dominate public discourse, it will hurt households and businesses. And from Labor's point of view, we want to win the next election, and we want to win the next election with this issue having been resolved. Doesn't mean there won't be differences between the two major parties on energy policy and climate change still, but if we can get at least a framework agreed, then the next term of Parliament, which we hope will be a shortened Labor government, will be something where we can start building for the 2020s and the 2030s rather than focused on an immediate energy crisis.
So if you've got an interest in this bipartisanship because you may be in government and things would be easier, I wonder, does the government now have an interest in making sure there's not bipartisanship? Because it, of course, as you say, has its own internal dynamics. We've seen Malcolm Turnbull turn up the rhetoric. We hear about blackout bill and other strong terms. What do you think the government's essential driving motive here is in political terms, as opposed to policy
terms? Well, it's a little difficult to discern at the moment. I think at the moment there, well, the Prime Minister particularly is torn between his sense of politics and being able to fight a political scare campaign, mostly built on completely misleading revisions of history, and his recognition that we are in the middle of a very serious crisis. I mean, when we've had these fights in the past, which I talk about in my book that you referred to, say when we had it first, when Tony Abbott dethroned Malcolm Turnbull as leader of the Liberal Party in 2009, or over the so-called carbon tax in 2011-2012, the underlying health of our energy system was very strong. We had a surplus of wholesale power. Wholesale power prices were very low. We had lots of cheap gas. Things are very different now. We can't indulge more politics on this, because that this is going to start to become a very serious drag on the nation's economy and a very serious issue for particularly low and middle income households. And I assume Malcolm Turnbull's in the next election to win it as well. If we don't resolve this over the course of the next 6 or 12 months, by the time the next parliament rolls around, and I assume he still wants to be Prime Minister then, we certainly want to be in government, things will be so much worse.
Now, we see the wrangling between the government and AGL. In general, does responsibility for energy security rest primarily with the private sector, with the market, or with government?
Well, I think it rests with governments. And I think governments have to make sure that the policy frameworks are in place that will achieve the traditional drivers of energy policy, which are reliable supply of electricity at affordable prices, and the more modern third pillar, if you like, or what Alan Finkel, the chief scientist, calls the third part of the trilemma, which is pollution control. And governments have a responsibility to make sure that the policy frameworks are set there to achieve those public interest outcomes, national interest outcomes. And I think everyone would accept that the energy market rules we currently have aren't doing that. They need to be substantially overhauled to reflect big technological change, these new challenges we have in terms of our international commitments, and the age of our generators. Now, in some states, those rules or investment under those rules will be driven by private companies. In Queensland, for example, it will be essentially state-owned companies. So it's a bit of a mix around the country, but wherever you are in the country, governments, and particularly the national government, must make sure that the framework, energy policy framework, is suitable for the nation's needs, and it's not now. Tony Abbott came in, tore up the Labor Party policy framework. He's very good at doing that, dismantled the whole thing 4 years ago, but put nothing in its place. And that's really the driver of the problems we have today.
Now, coal, I think, is a bit difficult for both sides of politics. How important in the energy mix do you see coal as being in the medium and longer term?
Well, the latest data from the energy regulator indicates that about 76% of the national electricity market's electricity comes from coal. So it's still a massive part of our system, way higher than pretty much any other developed country you can think of. That's why our electricity is about twice as polluting as America's and the OECD's on average. So that figure is going to come down. It needs to come down over the medium to long term to ensure we discharge our commitments to reduce carbon pollution. But it's also going to come down because when you're thinking about building new electricity generation, renewable energy is now the cheapest form of new generation to build. Now, you've got to firm that, you've got to make sure it's sort of reliable supply, or firm it up, as they call it in the industry, with good storage, with pumped hydro, with peaking plant from gas-fired power stations. But the new plant will be clean energy. Everyone accepts that now. It might have been in debate 5 years ago. It's not in debate anywhere in the world now. And that reality can't be evaded by Australia. But getting down from 76% to something much, much smaller than that is going to take many years. There's no question coal will still be a substantial part of our policy mix for the next couple of decades, at least. I think in the 2030s... there will be a substantial review done by people who are occupying this building, Michelle, depending on how technology's gone. But sort of as far as we politically can see, coal will still be a substantial share of Australia's electricity system.
But how would a Labor government ensure that you have an adequate amount of dispatchable power and low emissions? We do seem to have seen South Australia, that there's been something of a miscalculation there?
Well, to be clear about South Australia, there's not been an event where there's been a shortage of supply of electricity except one day on February the 8th this year. And there was a shortage of supply there because a very big generator wasn't turned on. There was plenty of electricity in the system for South Australia. It's just that one of the gas-fired generators wasn't turned on, in part because the market operator had misjudged how hot it was going to be. In South Australia, they thought from Melbourne it was going to be 37 degrees. It ended up 43 degrees, which is what the Bureau of Meteorology said all along. And by then, it was too late to turn the generator on. So you know, there's a challenge looking forward. There's no question about that. South Australia's energy plan that has put more gas peaking plant into the system has got backup generators. And by the beginning of December, we'll have the largest lithium ion battery in the world by a considerable distance. Is, I think, a very substantial case study about how you have a system with high penetration of renewables that uses some of this incredibly exciting new technology in electricity storage. Some of it will be those new batteries that are being developed and having their costs reduced dramatically right now. Some of it will be quite old technology like pumped hydro. You know, if Malcolm Turnbull's Snowy Hydro extension stacks up, and at the moment it's only a feasibility study, that really does, if it's built over the course of the 2020s, have the potential to turbocharge renewable energy development in New South Wales and some other parts of the country. So the next stage of deployment of renewable energy, now we're up to about 15 or 16% in Australia, much of which is hydro, but the next stage of renewable energy development over the next 15 years needs to take substantial account of the need to deal with that intermittency question. Happily, around the world, we're now seeing that technology, particularly battery storage, come through to the system at economically viable cost.
And gas is obviously important in the transition stage. How would a Labor government deal with the moratoriums that are existing at the moment in some state and territory areas?
Well, we need a mature discussion, I think, about onshore or the development of onshore gas resources. You know, I think there's been a bit of politicking from Canberra to wag the finger at some state governments about these moratoria. And, you know, frankly, I don't think that's actually going to achieve much by way of changing community attitudes. I mean, there is substantial community opposition in different parts of the country to these onshore gas developments, and they can't be wished away or lectured or hectored away from Canberra. I think we all know that through long experience over different policy issues. What you need to do is to put in place a framework that nurtures community understanding and community consent. That's what we tried to set up in Labor when we were last in government.
And put in place some dollars?
Well, with the support of Tony Windsor and Rob Oakeshott, we put in place frameworks that would give much better assurance, more neutral or objective expert assurance about what water impacts would be from these developments. The Water Trigger, the Independent Expert Scientific Committee. Tony Abbott tore a lot of that down. He tried to stop farmers groups and environment groups from being able to take court action over these questions. All of that behaviour by Abbott in particular just aggravated community attitudes. It did nothing to try and nurture consent. So I think the important thing or the Commonwealth, whether it's Malcolm Turnbull or Federal Labor, is to indicate to those communities and to state governments, whether they're Labor or Liberal, and one of the very big challenges is in Liberal-controlled New South Wales about this issue, we've got to indicate to them that we're going to bring something to the table. We're not just going to lecture communities and lecture state governments. And at the moment, we haven't seen Malcolm Turnbull actually do that. I think that's an important start to that discussion.
And a Labor government would do that.
That's right. We would do that. And, you know, because there is a substantial challenge headed our way. If those export operations are going to continue in Gladstone at their current rate, some of our traditional sources of gas, like the Cooper Basin in South Australia and the Gippsland Basin in Victoria, are starting to come to the end of their life over the next several years. We are going to have to work out where we get gas for manufacturing, for households, but also for power generation to firm up renewable energy.
Now, the Finkel Review's proposal for a clean energy target, which is now being examined by the government, deliberately left much of the detail up to the politicians, including where to set the benchmark for what counts as clean energy. How do you think the eventual policy should be structured? And in particular, should the bar be set high enough to allow clean coal to be counted towards the clean energy target?
Well, the chief scientist modelled it with a benchmark that would include gas and renewable energy, essentially.
But it was only a model.
He's made it clear that that was a model. He has said in public commentary that he thought it would be, to use his words, surprising for the design of a clean energy target to incentivise coal, to give certificates to new coal-fired
power. Didn't he fudge it a bit beyond that first statement?
He used the word surprising, and I think there is a more academic question about how far you stretch the piece of rubber. If the definition of clean energy includes coal, then what isn't clean energy, if you like?
So what's Labor's position?
So we've said that we're not going to rule anything out. Again, the government's not been clear about what its position will be. The ball's in their court. The report was to them. But we're not saying that we'll only sit down with them and talk about a threshold of 500 or 600 or 650 kilograms of carbon pollution per megawatt hour. If they want to come to us and talk about something that's different to the Finkel report, we think this is sufficiently important that we will sit down with them. I mean, obviously, it's not a blank cheque. It can't be completely off reservation. But we recognise that there are some challenges in their party room with the Finkel report in its current form, and we'll try and take a mature approach to this. I do make the point, though, that every piece of industry advice and the independent think tanks that look at this have indicated that even if, the new high-efficiency, low-emissions coal, so the more modern form of coal, is included within the threshold for a clean energy target, that won't change the economics on the ground. I mean, these are coal-fired power stations that lawfully are not able to be built in the United Kingdom or Canada under Conservative governments there. So this would be a very unusual policy to have by OECD standards. But we're not ruling anything out. We'll sit down and talk with the government about reasonable propositions.
We seem to be in a more interventionist era generally now, and Bill Shorten has suggested that some of the present energy problems have flowed from privatisation. Would Labor like to see more assets back in public hands, or at least more heavily regulated in this area?
Well, I think there's no question that the promises made at the time of particularly the very substantial privatisations in states like Victoria and South Australia in the 90s haven't come to pass for consumers. And we were promised that more competition and private arrangements in this essential service would lead to lower prices, would lead to more competition, which would flow into lower prices. We've seen only very recently the Victorian State Government commissioned a bipartisan report that had Liberal and Labor representatives into the retail market in Victoria, a heavily privatised, probably the most deregulated retail market in Australia, and it found that the retail costs being paid by households was higher than any other state, and dramatically higher, for example, than European countries and the UK. So those promises just haven't come to pass, and I think people are enormously disappointed that the warnings that were made in the 90s about the perils of privatising an essential service really have been shown to be true. There is that, I think, very serious concern about what happened to our system over the last couple of decades. But there's a broader concern at the moment as well that you've got a market or a system in electricity that's in profound transition. And any system in transition, if you leave it to the market, runs the risk of market failure. And in an essential service, governments just can't sit back and let market failure happen. There will be a political imperative and a policy imperative to intervene and make sure this market failure that does tend to happen in these substantial transitions is plugged, is fixed.
Intervene without owning anything, or try and turn the clock back?
Well, turning the clock back is a pretty major undertaking given the scale of the privatisations that Liberal governments in South Australia and Victoria, for example, undertook, because the whole of the system was sold off. Like, there's nothing.
But in South Australia, isn't the government building a power station?
They're building a power station as a strategic reserve. That's right. And, Malcolm Turnbull's proposing a very substantial extension with his feasibility study into Snowy Hydro.
Well, so, indeed, taking the whole thing over.
And potentially taking it over from Victoria, New South Wales, as you say. So I think you will see these things happen. But I come back to a point I made earlier, that the critical thing is to get the rules right. There will be a continuing debate about whether particular players in the system are public or privately owned. Whether they are publicly or privately owned, they have to be subject to rules that work for consumers, whether that's the retailers or generators or the network operators, and that's not working at the moment.
Would a Labor government continue the thrust of the Turnbull government of trying to buy all the Snowy scheme?
Look, we're going to wait to see the feasibility study. This is still at a feasibility study stage. Malcolm trumpets this is something that he's about to cut the ribbon on. This is still very early days.
Well, there are two things, aren't there? There's the expansion of it,
yes,
but there's also the proposal for the Commonwealth to buy the whole thing.
Yes, but I think they go hand in hand. I mean, if the feasibility study doesn't come up trumps for the government and says that this is going to be a problem with competitiveness against other forms of storage in the future, or the idea of much smaller distributed pumped hydro that some are talking about now might be a better economic proposal than a single big study in a national park. I mean, I just think it's early days. We're going to wait till the feasibility study comes down, look at it then, and if the government, again, sticks by its proposal for potential takeover of Victoria, New South Wales ownership, then we'd look at that then.
Let's turn to the renewable energy target. What's Labor's commitment on that at the moment?
Well, we're still committed to ensuring that there's that level of penetration of renewable energy in the system by 2030. And all of the modelling that we've seen around the clean energy target or the emissions intensity scheme policy that was supported by other business groups before the Finkel report shows that that really is not going to be much of a stretch, frankly, given how fast technology is moving and how fast costs are coming down. So that's still our policy commitment. But obviously, we want to make sure that the mechanism for electricity investment is as far as possible able to be achieved in a bipartisan fashion. So that is the focus for us at the moment.
Now, just finally, looking at this from the point of view of very hard-pressed consumers, what's your best advice to householders who are really struggling with their power bills? Should they go solar? Should they see this is the best way of protecting themselves, or what?
Well, I think it very much depends on their circumstances. Are they owner-occupiers? I mean, if you're not an owner-occupier, then solar is a very difficult proposition. That's something Labor's looking at very carefully because we think there are social equity issues involved in that challenge. This has been a great revolution for people who own their own home, not particularly for renters or people in public housing. So if you're in a position to put an investment into solar, I think it's quite clear now that the payback period really works for you. We've got to get much better at helping households become more energy efficient. That really has dropped off the edge of the table. We're still a very energy inefficient economy in Australia, far more than the OECD average, far more than comparable countries. And I think there is real value in shopping around, particularly in those deregulated markets where there are a range of retailers on offer. Now, I don't pretend that's easy. I mean, shopping around for this stuff is hard. It's not the panacea that I think Malcolm Turnbull tried to make it seem like a couple of weeks ago when he called the retailers in again and got them to write a letter. But I think there are a whole range of technologies coming on that increasingly will be cost effective for households, will be easier to navigate. I'm not a technophile myself, so I find some of these software solutions to link up your household appliances and your solar and all those sorts of things pretty forbidding, I have to say.
So have you gone solar and have you shopped around?
Yeah, we've had solar for a long time and had green power as a backup for even longer than that. I'm still nervous about the software. Someone's going to have to walk me through that. I think it's
Malcolm
important.
Turnbull might help you.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's really in much of a mood to help me on anything, really, Michelle.
Mark Butler, thank you very much for talking with us today. That's all from our Conversations podcast. Thank you to my producer, Eliza Berlage. We'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.